Ladies and gentlemen, please continue your breakfast if you haven't finished, but we're going to go ahead and get started. We are honored today to have many VIPs with us this morning. Please hold your applause until after I've introduced them to you. Mayor Tommy Ballard, Mayor of the City of Huntsville, Congressman Mo Brooks, Alabama's 5th Congressional District, Vice Admiral James Seary, Director of the Missile Defense Agency, Lieutenant General David Mann, Commanding General, SMDC RSTRAT, Major General Daniel Hughes, Director for Test, Missile Defense Agency, Rear Admiral Bohema Case, did I get that right? Royal Netherlands Navy, Brigadier General Gregory Bowen, DCG for Operations, SMDC RSTRAT, and Brigadier General Bill Cooley, Program Integration for Missile Defense Agency. So please give these gentlemen a round of applause, please. Well, good morning. I'm Joe Fitzgerald. I'm the chairman of the National Defense Industrial Association Space and Missile Defense Working Group. The working group, chartered under the National Defense Industrial Association, is in its 28th year of educating the general population and elected representation on space and missile defense issues. Key to that education is advocacy, of which the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, MDAA, plays a critical part. MDAA's mission is to make the world safer by advocating for the development and deployment of missile defense systems to defend the United States, its armed forces, and its allies against missile threats. MDAA is in its 14th year as the only organization in existence whose primary mission is to educate the American public about missile defense issues and to recruit, organize, and mobilize proponents to advocate for the critical need of missile defense. MDAA is a nonpartisan, membership-based, and membership-funded organization with over 14,000 members. MDAA hosts a variety of missile defense-related events around the world. It hosts its annual Missile Defender of the Year Award ceremony at Alexandria each year, recognizing excellence among the U.S. missile defense operators from the U.S. Army, Navy, Air Force, and National Guard. The organization also holds annual Defender of the Year events with the Republic of Korea, NATO, and the United Arab Emirates, Alaska, and at U.S. Northern Command, North American Aerospace Defense Command. MDAA has also been involved in inner city, working with our youth in inner city, which is a very timely activity and engagement for which we're very grateful that MDAA takes part in take care of inner city youth. Since 2014, MDAA hosts regular roundtable discussions on missile defense issues in the U.S. Capitol. Topics have included missile defense of the U.S. homeland and missile defense radars and sensors, missile defense from military operations perspective. These events typically feature remarks from recently retired military leaders and with missile defense expertise. Those with missile defense expertise. The NDIA Space and Missile Defense Working Group is proud to be a member of NDIA, proud to be a member of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, and is proud to take part in this morning's Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance 2016 Huntsville Breakfast of Champions. Let me now just take a couple of moments, please indulge me. Now, I know that some of you have heard this before, particularly Ricky. You see his head down over here, he doesn't want me to say this. But I got to take a couple of minutes for those of you that do not know, particularly why there's a passion in this man for missile defense. So I've got to elaborate a little bit. So bear with me to introduce the chairman and founder of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, Mr. Ricky Ellison. Mr. Ellison's passion for missile defense began when he was attending the University of Southern California on a football scholarship. He played a little football in this time. He was inspired by President Reagan's 1983 speech on SDI, and by Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the hydrogen bomb, while serving as an intern with Lockheed Martin. While at USC, he earned a degree in international relations with an emphasis on defense and strategic studies. Mr. Ellison was a starting linebacker for the USC Trojans, winning the 1978 National Championship and the 1979 and 1980 Rose Bowls. He was drafted by the San Francisco 49ers and began advocating for missile defense during his off seasons of his 10-year NFL career. His first professional work began on the Exo-Atmospheric Reentry Interceptor, IRIS, in 1984, the nation's second successful missile intercept by use of kinetic energy. He won 3 Super Bowl championships with the 49ers while achieving all-rookie, all-Madden, and alternate all-pro recognition before retiring in 1992. Mr. Ellison spent the last 3 years in the NFL with the Oakland Raiders and was a member of the playoff teams for 9 of his 10 years in the NFL. He visits missile defense installations around the world to better understand how they are used in the field and to spend time with the warfighters to recognize their sacrifices. He is frequently sought after for his missile defense expertise by the administration, by military officials, members of Congress, and policymakers. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host for this morning's Breakfast of Champions, a great American and true champion, Ricky Ellison.
Thank you. Very, very kind of you, Joe. It's great to be here. It's really an honor to be in Alabama today. As Tom Battle told me, and I sincerely believe it, you are the heart and soul of missile defense for the world right here in Huntsville, Alabama. You also are at the command of SMDC, the heart and soul, and the command is here in Huntsville, Alabama. And you have the National Champions of the University of Alabama is in this state here in Alabama. So, and I want to commend each of you, and that's why we do this breakfast, on your leadership and your ability to influence and change culture this past year. I think this is one of the most dynamic years for missile defense, as you heard Admiral Haney yesterday eloquently speak through all the achievements that you have achieved. And certainly we know the threat has been much more prolific than we've ever seen it on it. So it's an opportunity here to kick off the season for the next upcoming season and to take a little accolades and recognition for some of the great leaders of our culture in this group here, in this room, on what they've achieved. But I want to start off with culture. And I want to start off with, as we know, 17 days from now, the kickoff of the football season for the country is in Dallas Cowboys, and there's a little private school in Los Angeles that's playing this national championship team in Alabama. And we know this little private school in Los Angeles, so just so you know, that we are subsidizing the University of Alabama football program. We are, in fact, paying your offensive coordinator $2.6 million this year. So I want you to think through this a little bit on who's your daddy here. So, and I have to give absolutely credit to this state and to that university in Tuscaloosa. That university, by the way, that football program brings in $95 million of revenue. It has a $33 million dollar profit from that program, and it's leveraged, I think, $1.6 billion in other gifts from that program. So they know what they're doing. There's no other program in this country that knows what they're doing. And Mo, you should probably have that economic formula working in our government. And they have a phenomenal leadership culture. They've got buy-in as your cousin. I give you great credit for what he has done. The athletic director at Alabama has produced this ingenious way of doing it. In reverse, we've got a private school in L.A. that has a population of 4 million people, that's in a state that's the 8th biggest economy in the world, the number one GNP in this state, and we can only get $45 million revenue. We can only get $15 million profit. And we're firing 5 of our coaches over the last 3 years. So we have a little bit of an issue with our leadership culture aspect of it. And it should be a great game. We certainly have the talent to play that. This is family. We are a community here. And I know some of you may know and would like to know on another culture that I'm familiar with, and that is my son's team on the Minnesota Vikings. And by the way, they are a culture that's changed over 5 years. And their first game is about 22 days later, a little north here in Nashville, Tennessee, and they'll play the Titans. And Rhett, my son, had a severe injury. He's on the physical unable to perform list. He will be back part of the team, and it's great because the team has given him liberty to get off that list when he gets off the list right now. Jimmy Graham, the great tight end, had the same injury. Seattle Seahawks, but he was about 2 months earlier. He's back on the field, and Rhett will be back on the field contributing to the team. All right, so let's get back to leadership culture change here. And I think from my perspective, and I've had some intimate discussions with the National Security Council last week, had an opportunity to sit down with Michelle Flournoy's head of missile defense, as we believe that she would be the Secretary of Defense if Hillary Clinton wins. I've had the Trump policy group come visit my organization and sit down with me for hours. And Jim, boy, they don't know it too well. So we got to get them up if that wild card does happen. So, but I'm going to tell you, it is a very, very bright future for missile defense. And this is a change. We're going to have a change of leadership. We're going to have a change of culture that's going to happen in November. And for our community, this is a really inflection point that may not ever happen for another 4 years, or may not happen until another 8 years. And the issue that we have, and you've done a remarkable job in manning and funding, because you've had declining budgets, and you've had an increased threat that continues to go, and you are limited by a policy that was built in 1999, and a policy continued in 2010, that's basically about building missile defense systems against two specific countries. And the world's changed. We don't live in 1999. We're going to have a lot more on our plate. And there is a window of opportunity here to change the policy, change the support, and increase the capability, increase the funding and investment for missile defense and air defense. And from our perspective, the public has to weigh in, because a lot of this is nickel and dime stuff that you've been involved with behind closed doors. We have not unleashed the American public. Now, we've done some pretty interesting stuff in Hawaii. We've been able to get a fully democratic state and every one of their legislators to write a letter, signature to the President of the United States. And we've set a standard that way. And it's percolating in the White House now on operationalizing the sites in Hawaii. But that is a formula that we're gonna engage and go into New York, go into Michigan, go into other places. But we've got to bring the public much more engaged in this, because it's too hard, too important for our nation and for the world not to have a sizable jump in your investment from 1% to 2%, and get this thing changed and get it right. So we're excited about what's going to happen in the next few months on the transition team. We are family, and I do want to revel in the great accomplishments and the great character of General John Rossi. He was a special individual. I don't know if Tony English is in this room today, but I was with him. He saved Tony English's life in his backyard. He saved another life. His name was Luis, at Walter Reed, amputee soldier. And he was in a coma for a year, and Rossi challenged Walter Reed to keep him on, and I was in that room when he came alive on that. That was two gentlemen. And I'll tell you, I have a fraternity brother in L.A. We do other things and play football. We make movies, so we have that produced The Lone Survivor, which was a a story. And I took General Rossi to that screening, and he turned his back on that warrior, on that story. That's the man he was. And that's the man, if you had to go fight tonight, if you had to go fight anywhere, any place, that's the first guy you would put on your team. So we're cherishing him, and we at MDAA, I talked to Dave about it, I've talked to Liz, we are dedicating our leadership award in Korea as a John Rossi Missile Defender of the Year from now on. So that will happen, and we will also have a John Rossi Military Fellowship at MDAA for his leadership. So I'd like to introduce our senior missile defender for the United States Army. And what a role he has done. More importantly, what he has done as a father. I would say, Dave, you're a father of this community in the role that you have. And though you are the expert on missile defense, I've been told, and that's the best way from underneath you, that you can challenge any of the Air Force guys on space. So you've done a remarkable job being able to speed up and communicate and advocate at the level we need as we see our nation going into an Air Force at NORTHCOM, Air Force at STRATCOM, and so forth. So he's been great. And Dave, your emotional leadership over this weekend and this past week has been spectacular. So we might not get a chance to see Dave in this setting again with his stars on. So it's an opportunity to thank him for what he's done with little resources, with a reduced manpower, and a very challenging environment over the last 4 years to make us safe and have our country be manned correctly and protect us. So ladies and gentlemen, Lieutenant General Dave Mann.
Boy, that's how do you follow that? First of all, I just want to thank you all, and I mean this genuinely, thank you all for your support. And I'm always sensitive about, the resources, the time that it takes to put a venue like this together. Ronnie Cronister, great effort. And again, I hope this is meeting all of your needs, our industry leaders that are with us today. I'm trying to tell all my folks, I want you to go by, learn what folks are doing, because quite frankly, I think the power of these kind of venues is the opportunity to really engage one another, find out what's going on, and maybe, kind of take some of those ideas and percolate them even up to a higher standard. Congressman Brooks, sir, I want to thank you for your support and for your service to this nation. And we probably have no greater advocate for missile defense policies than Congressman Brooks. And, sir, I really appreciate your leadership in that regard. Mayor Battle, there's a reason why we're going to be retiring here. And it's because of the environment that you've created, the community. People are just nice people here, and it's just has all the big city amenities without some of the traffic you have to deal with up there in the northern part of the country. But again, thank you, Mayor. I really appreciate it. Most interesting man in the room. He hates it when I say that. You ever see that commercial? The most interesting. I tell you, Joe Fitzgerald, Arcosa, God bless him. Everybody knows Joe. No matter where you go in the country, everybody knows Joe Fitzgerald. And sir, thank you very much. To my battle buddy, Jim Searing, unbelievable energy. He probably doesn't know what time zone he is in right now because he's just getting back from a PACOM trip and then he's heading the other side of the world. One thing that, and I don't mean to make this awkward for Jim, but what really is very kind of endearing about him is the fact that he truly cares about the warfighter and making sure that we get it right. And so, again, I could not ask for a better battle buddy and someone to go up there and do battle with members of Congress during testimony season. God bless you. You always take the brunt of it. I really appreciate that, by the way. But anyway, thanks, Jim. And to Ricky, I've had an opportunity to talk about Ricky on many occasions, and like I've said before, he doesn't need to be doing what he does. He really doesn't. I mean, he's achieved so much throughout his career. I don't think he's worried about the next meal, but he does so because he cares. He cares about the defense of this country and making sure that we get it right. And so, Ricky, I just want to say, number one, God bless you. I also want to take this opportunity to say how much it meant to Liz Rossi, the tribute that you put online. That passage alone, you have no idea how that made her feel. So I just want to say thank you. You know, we talked about the tribute to John, and I think it's very fitting that we look at the Korean peninsula and all that John did as the leader of the mighty 35th, and I just think it's fitting that we really recognize his service and really kind of attach it especially to the Paycom AOR. So thank you, Ricky. I really appreciate that, and I know Liz really appreciates your support. God bless you. Joe kind of stole my point about advocacy, and that is so critically important. You know, when they hear Dave Mann talk, they kind of expect it, that I drink the Kool-Aid. You know, I'm going to really advocate for space capabilities and missile defense. But when we have, organizations like MDAA, when we get our warfighters, the COCOMs, to come out and really say, hey, listen, I need that capability, that's powerful, and that resonates. And so, again, I think a lot of the advances, a lot of the successes that we've achieved in missile defense, I wish I could claim some credit, but it's not my credit. It's because we've been able to get the word out. And so it's illustrative in the fact that we're looking at possibly accelerating some programs where it makes sense. And that's coming from the senior leaders of the Army. Again, we have to make the case, but they're willing to take a look at acceleration of various programs. And secondly, it's also reflected in force structure. We all know that the Army is downsizing. And the fact that we're seeing potentially growth in not only the space side of the house, but also the increase in our Army Air Missile Defense Commands, like I mentioned yesterday, increasing the manpower of those organizations because of what they bring to the warfighter. And so, I think slowly but surely, we're getting the word out. And I know that I share that video about my command shamelessly into so many different venues, but I do so for a reason. Because I want to make sure folks know what we bring to the fight. And again, nothing against our infantry and armor brethren, but quite frankly, that's not what the threat is faced or really focusing their efforts on. They're focusing their efforts on exploiting any kind of perceived vulnerabilities in terms of missile defense and our on-orbit space capabilities. That's where they're putting their efforts. And so, again, I think it's only appropriate that we look at our missile defense capabilities, we make sure that it meets the mark, as was mentioned before, in terms of what the threat is really focusing on, as well as our on-orbit space capabilities. And that's something that I'm hitting very, very hard with members of my leadership team at the Department of the Army to make sure that they understand the significance of on-orbit space capabilities and why we need to make sure that we have the resilience and assured access to those capabilities. So again, Ricky, I can't thank you enough. God bless you. He was talking to me about his kids. Talk about an overachieving family. Good Lord. It must be the wife. But anyway, I just want to say thank you very much for your support, your assistance. And again, I hope that this venue is meeting your objectives. Because quite frankly, I think it's a win-win. By helping you achieve your objectives, you're helping me to achieve mine. So God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. The most expensive, most powerful men in the world, and women, change culture. CEOs, presidents. We have a gentleman that'll probably be here the last time speaking to you at his command that came into an environment in 2012 that took a kind of a dysfunctional environment and changed culture. tremendous, tremendous achievement. And what he has done, and it's appropriate that this year, with the GBI test, he has validated the fix of the GMD program. And on July 8th, the NATO Secretary General declared EPA Phase 2 deployed. And on July 8th, on the other side of the world, a THAAD announcement by Korea to do that. So Jim has increased the population that's being defended by missile defense by 50%. And I say 300 million with the America, and about 75 million in Europe, and about 75 million or 50 million in Korea. Remarkable. So I want to introduce a great leader that has changed our culture and has put us in a great position to leap forward. Jim Searing.
Great to see everybody. Thanks, Ricky. The only football story I have is the Army-Navy record. But we won't go there. This is just a fantastic opportunity to get together every year, and I've gotten so much out of it. Dave, I mean, your friendship and stewardship over the last 3 years is nothing. I couldn't ask for more. In terms of no seam between the warfighter and the material developer. And I was taught that by Dick Formica, who I saw in the audience back here, on the power of that relationship. And I would extend that to your boss, Admiral Haney, and to Admiral Gordney before, and now General Robinson, Admiral Harris, Admiral Scaparotti, General Scaparotti, and the others at the component level. This sort of seamless linkage between us as the material developer, we don't fight the war, we don't operate, they do, but we listen to them and we provide what they need. And I think that we've been very successful up on the Hill because of that relationship. Congressman Brooks, thank you for everything that you do in support of our country and missile defense. I can always count on an engaging conversation when I come over to see you on multiple topics, but thank you for your leadership over there, sir. I know that I have an ear and a support for what we're doing here at MDA. Joe, sir, great to see you again, as always, in your stewardship around the country and your service. And Mayor Battle, again, for your support of everything that we're doing here in Huntsville. Ricky, again, thank you for what you do and what you've done, everything that you did for General Rossi and his wife. I actually, when I was in Korea last week, got a question from the Koreans, did I know General Rossi? That's where his power went worldwide. And they knew. And it was sort of telling that I got that from somebody in the Army in Korea that knew him. And that's how wide his reach was. And I know that we all remember him in great honor today. I want to just leap off for just a minute or two off a quote that you've maybe heard me say in the past, and it's one of my favorite quotes. Maybe I said it at the change of command with Pat O'Reilly back in 2012. I can't remember if I did. Ronald Reagan said, "You can do great good in this world if you don't mind who gets the credit." And I always sort of remember that in terms of all the credit tends to be leaped on me as the leader of MDA in terms of what we're delivering, and you know, the combatant commanders stand up at our conference and your conference and say, MDA is just doing great, Jim Searing's doing great, and it is not me. It is people in this organization like Dan Hughes, Bill Cooley, Ole Knudsen, I'm sure I have others here as well, that are doing the heavy lifting. We're getting ready for a kill vehicle meeting today, which will be extensive. And I'm getting emails last night from Bill Cooley at 10 o'clock at night. Here's some thoughts about tomorrow. It is the patriots in the government, and MDA in particular, and the patriots at SMDC that are doing a lot of the heavy lifting on the government side. But we in the government don't build anything. Okay, you and industry build and deliver capability that we take credit for. The warfighters operate and defend this nation. And I just, you know, quick tour around the world, and really it's been a tour around the world the last couple months. I've been to Alaska. I've seen the work that Boeing and Northrop are doing on the missile field and the upgrade of 44 by 17. I've seen the radar work going in Alaska. We're literally trying to pull down the 1960s BMUs antennas as we speak, and the work that Lockheed has gone on there. We was out in Korea helping General Brooks talk to the public about the deployment of THAAD to Korea. We don't talk. This is a Lockheed or a Raytheon system. It's just the system, and that the warfighter has confidence that they're going to deploy it. And I just think it's very powerful that we forget industry on who built it and who developed it. And I just want to say, you know, thank you around the world. I know Northrop Grumman did a lot of the heavy lifting for Boeing up in Alaska. Lockheed, we're delivering SM-3s, SM-6s. It just happens. We've got now three or four missions for SM-6. How many times have we, in the last, 10 years, fielded a version of SM-3? How many different versions of GBIs have we fielded? We're building radars in Alaska. We're going to build a radar in Hawaii. It is the radar, combat system, interceptor industrial base that does this. I don't know if I have Aerojet here. Aerojet, ATK, Aerojet and Orbital ATK. I mean, they're very important suppliers on what we do. And critical to, Ricky, you mentioned the thruster issue and what Aerojet did to engineer that complicated fix with a symptom that we could never have expected in space. Orbital ATK, I was just walking their factory floor last night and saw the pieces of the ICBM that will be the target for the GM test in a few months. 80 feet tall. That's where missile defense is going. We're going to engage an ICBM, three-stage, 80 feet, with a complicated reentry vehicle on it, at over 5,000 kilometers. That is not done by the government. That is done by our industrial base. And I recognize what you guys have done, and I appreciate it every day. Do I hold you accountable? Yes. Is my standard high? Yes. But you are true partners and patriots in my eye, as important as any warfighter or any MDA developer, and a big part of our team. So I just wanted to highlight that today. I don't get an opportunity to thank industry enough, but you've been the key to where we are today, where we're going. So I'm going to need more. I'm going to need more out of that. I'm going to need more out of that apple. And I'm not bashful about asking for it. I need your best ideas. I know you can innovate. I know you control costs. And I know we can do it. So thank you very much.
I'd like to introduce our next guest speaker, Mo. And I want to let you know, over all those years with the declining budgets, Mo has led the charge on the House side, throwing funding after funding and hundreds of millions up. I know it gets cut back, but the effort that you have given to lead the charge on fixing that problem and giving us investment is commendable. So, welcome, and Representative Mo Brooks, of your district and your home.
I'm going to let my partisanship show just a little bit. I couldn't help but pay particular attention to part of Joe's introduction of Ricky. And perhaps it was an embellishment, but I think some clarification is in order. In 1978, when he was with Southern Cal and they won a national title, it was shared with the University of Alabama. Okay? Make sure that's on the record.
Mo, we did go to Tuscaloosa that year. And we did beat Bear Bryant. Is that right?
And still shared it. I look forward to the game. It ought to be a good one in Dallas this year. You know, in Washington, we have thousands of issues. Cast thousands of votes each session of Congress. And as policymakers, we often find our mental capacity diluted with all these myriad of issues. We might on the same day focus on Zika funding, Trans-Pacific Partnership, issues with Iran and the agreement in that nature, the next continuing resolution or appropriations bill, and all the subparts of that. And I mention that because it is so important for us in Washington to have people who have developed the expertise and are able to focus in a laser beam type way on a particular subject matter and share that expertise with us so that we can make better policy decisions. And in that vein, General Mann, Admiral Searing, y'all have been great in working with my office and making sure that my staff and myself had the insight that we needed to better prepare America for the threats that we face, particularly in the missile theater. And so I want to thank both of you. It's always a joy when you come to my office and we sit down and we chat, although we do talk about things other than just missile defense. There are a lot of things. And I'm going to miss the day when y'all are not able to come up because you've retired or you've been shifted to a different command, whatever the case may be. I hope that your successors will do as ably as y'all have done. Time will tell, but you're leaving them big shoes to fill when that day comes. Now, I'm going to talk about missile defense in two different contexts. We have some major challenges in Washington, D.C. I'm sure most of you are familiar with them in some way or another. We have a presidential race, and we've got the election year generally. There is always an issue when you get a new president because the president has such a major impact on national defense priorities. And in this instance, it's very foggy with both of these candidates. On the one hand, you've got Hillary Clinton, whose track record on missile defense issues is amorphous to me. I didn't keep that closely aligned with her tentative of her votes in the United States Senate when she was a senator. She may be our next president, and we're going to have to work hard, all of us, to make sure that she takes us in the right direction, that she understands the threat, and she understands what we have to do in order to face it. On the other hand, you've got Donald Trump, who has no track record of any kind, never having served in public office before, and that makes it kind of a wild card. If he ends up being the next president, we're going to have the same education process. And I hope that there are people in this room that have contacts with one camp or the other in order to help with that messaging. While the executive branch is clearly important in this process, Congress also plays a role. Looking at the elections in November, and I can only rely on polling data, and as y'all have known, seen it, Donald Trump's numbers are declining, and that is having an adverse effect on some of our Senate races and some of our House races. Now, no one knows if these polls are going to turn out to be accurate, and there's still, about 12 weeks before the election. A lot of things can happen that change the direction of those polls. But as things stand now, if the election were today, and if the polling data is accurate, we probably would lose the United States Senate. We'd end up with about 48 or 49 Senate seats, somewhere in that ballpark, if the polling data today is accurate. That would put us in a very good position, as an aside, to recapture the Senate in 2018, when we have a much more favorable geographical climate where we'll be fighting our battles. On the House side, I think we're fairly secure in keeping the House of Representatives, although I think we're also on target right now to lose about 10 or 15 seats, which is not unexpected because we were at pretty much record highs. And I mentioned those two things about the House and the Senate because the House and the Senate historically have provided some kind of degree of stability with respect to what we're going to do with missile defense. And so it's going to be important that these elections on the House and the Senate side end up in a way in which we still have the people in the right places on the House Armed Services Committee, on the Appropriations Committees, on the Senate Armed Services Committee to properly fund missile defense. I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll end up with a favorable Congress, but I'm still uncertain as to who's going to be president and what that president's goals will be or priorities will be with respect to national defense. So we'll see how that plays out. All of that is very, very important because there are going to be tremendous pressures in Washington, D.C. for us to shift spending priorities. Tommy Battle, the mayor, Mike Ward with the chamber, many of you have seen my Chamber of Commerce remarks in March, annual Washington update with the red stalactite chart that depicts our deficits and then our accumulated debt and all that kind of stuff. And I mentioned Mike and Tommy because almost every time that I talk to them afterwards, they talk about how it was really not a very uplifting set of remarks. There are others who share that viewpoint. Well, I want you to, I don't know if y'all saw this, but the Friday after Congress adjourned, or went into recess, which was the Friday before the Republican National Convention began, so there's very little media attention on this, the Office of Management and Budget sent out a new revised projection for the deficit for this fiscal year. And believe it or not, it made Mo Brooks' speech in March at the Washington Update look optimistic, which gives you an idea of the challenges we face. I was based on a Congressional Budget Office. The deficit was projected at that time to be in the neighborhood of $534 billion, which is $95 billion in the year we just finished when it was $439 billion. And now OMB is telling us that we're probably going to break $600 billion deficit, which will mean a $161 billion worsening of our deficit position this year over last fiscal year. And then you've got the long-term projections by the CBO that are anything but rosy. And so who we have in the United States Congress and who we have in the White House as we make these difficult decisions to try to minimize our risk of a debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy and reprioritizing to make sure that national defense receives the kind of funds that are needed to ensure our country's safety, that's going to be very important. So I hope as y'all work your way through this election process in the upcoming year at the House level, the Senate level, and the presidential level, you keep in mind the competing kinds of pressures that there are going to be on Congress to shift funding, say, from national defense to the wealth transfer programs, the safety net programs, or how best to deal with the increasing threat posed by the worsening of our deficit situation. I'm one of those. I strive to try to promote two things, and to some degree they conflict with each other. One is we have to get a balanced budget. I don't want us to go through a debilitating insolvency and bankruptcy. If you've looked at Venezuela or Puerto Rico or Greece or Argentina, you know that is really bad. And I remember, and it was one of the reasons I ran for the United States Congress, when Admiral Mike Mullen testified for the House Armed Services Committee in 2010 and again in 2011, many of you may remember this, he was asked, well, what is America's greatest national security threat? And people were anticipating some kind of description of the threat posed by Russia or China or North Korea or Iran getting nuclear weapons and the capability of delivering them and the other myriads of threats that are out there. But instead, he talked about it in terms of our rising deficits and accumulated debt that long-term can strip us of the ability to pay for our national defense. And so please understand as you work your way through this election over the next 12 weeks, the challenges we face as a country, and do what you can do in trying to resolve which of these candidates who are on the ballot are the ones who will best balance the money we need for national defense and the demand for us to reduce our deficit and get our debt under control before we go into this downward spiral so far that we're not able to get ourselves out of it. I vote for virtually all of the national defense spending, and I do it under this rationale. It's better to be in debt than to be dead. I mean, that's pretty simplistic, right? Okay, and so that's how I justify it. But there are others in Washington who want to dramatically cut national defense spending Some will be based on the threat posed by the deficit and debt. Some will be on the desire to fulfill campaign promises to give away more free stuff with money that we don't have. And I hope you'll take these remarks to heart. Our country is at a major crossroads, as we are every 4 years when the presidency is staked, given the power of that position. And America's got to make the right decisions, not only at the presidential level, but also at the Senate and House level, for our country to continue to be the greatest nation in world history, as I would submit that we have been for 75 years, beginning with World War II, when we played an instrumental role in defeating imperialist Japan, Nazi Germany, and fascist Italy. And we can continue there if we as Americans will responsibly exercise our voting privileges on Election Day and put into place the right leaders who will do the right things so that we can continue our position of greatness. Ricky, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. I didn't hear anything about Go Trojans. I don't even know what y'all's... What is it? Never mind. I'll hear it later in Texas. But on my end, Roll Tide.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, in life, sometimes you don't get to choose who the quarterback is. And you got to play. You got to play for whatever quarterback that is. You got to give him the ball. And I think, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen in the election. But whatever is going to happen, we're going to play. And we're going to win. So, Jim and Mo and Dave, thank you very much. And to Jim's point, we go around the world. We did 7 missile defense leadership around the world in 4 different countries. And we awarded 56 operators, warfighters in the Navy, Army, Marines, and Air Force. And today, we're gonna recognize the people that have done a tremendous job in making these systems on it. So it's my privilege to warm my arm up a little bit and pass the ball out. I do want to say that next week in Tucson, Arizona, we're going to be able to validate and recognize the GMD team for what their accomplishments are with Senator John McCain. And I believe Admiral Sirin will be with me on that to give due credit to a phenomenal system that has been corrected and done right. Okay, so Mo, you ready? I got you a bigger ball so you can catch it a little easier. And you know, we know bubble screen, buddy. And we know what Lane can do. Remember, we fired Lane Kiffin in a parking lot at 3 in the morning. So you got him as an offensive coordinator. So good luck with that. Come on up, Mo.
Are you actually
going to
throw it?
I'm going to try it.
Are you
worried about it? All right, I'm getting there. Good job. Nice catch. All right, Tom Battle, you good? You ready? Come on up. Can we get your cousin to work in Congress?
Yeah, he'd be good.
There you go. Hey, Brad, is J.D. Hammond here? No? Come on, Brad. Come on. Come on up. Brad's college has the starting Minnesota Vikings quarterback has come from Louisville. There you go.
Lockheed Martin, ladies and gentlemen.
Jim Chilton with Boeing, representing Boeing. He's an Alabama season ticket holder, I know that. Kevin, Campbell, Arthur. Well, it's you know, I want to. It's all right, Dan got it last year, so.
Yeah. No, like it from Notre Dame.
Okay. There you go. Vice Kramer, are you ready? Raytheon. Yeah. We got Mark. This gentleman is a tight end, ladies and gentlemen, from San Jose State. He is ATK. I'm sorry.
Small state
school. Yeah. Thanks, man.
I'm sorry. It's Aerojet. I apologize. Is Mark here from Mark from Orville? Come on up.
I'm a lineman, be aware. I can't catch.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then we got Joe Leonard from Huntington Ingalls. Come on up there. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for enjoying and having you here for breakfast, and really appreciate your leadership. And again, you retained the world champion status, you're undefeated, and you rule the world. So thank you, and have a great day. Thanks. Thank you.